I'm Don Hartzell. I'm the commissioner of the World Air League. We're organizing the historic first race of airships and zeppelins to circle our planet. We're now on Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right. Hello. Hello, everybody. What is up out in, I don't know, what do you call podcast? The podverse? The universe that listens to, you know, like if you when you're on a radio, you talk about to your radio audience. I don't know what we call you guys out there, but faithful listeners, I guess I should say, or newcomers. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. I am Scott. Here in the beautiful, rainy state of New Jersey. And that is Mike down in the...
sunny Georgia.
The sunny, racist Georgia.
I mean, they're not all racist. Hey, I lived in New Jersey quite a while. I don't think you guys are shooting 100 up there, to be honest.
Especially, like, maybe exit, like, 8 and below on the turnpike.
Mm-hmm.
Turns into a whole different Jersey.
And
then we have the Italians, and they really throw off. They throw all numbers on that. But anyway, guys, welcome on back. I believe this is episode 245. One of these days, we really do have to look at the total number of people that we have spoken to. I'm guessing close to 400 at this point. 350, yeah, somewhere in that ballpark.
I got the sheet all updated and everything. It's a matter of going back and eliminating the repeats.
Yeah.
So
we need you need someone who's like really good. Ever see someone who's like really good at Excel and stuff, and they can just like, I don't know if you are, I'm terrible at Excel, but they just like pop in these shortcuts and all of a sudden they're like, oh, the total number's this, like they can calculate all the rows and like, it's pretty amazing. But
I got an average Excel game, if you will. I mean, I can't brag too much about it. You know, I can brag about many things, but my Excel, I'm pretty in the middle. I got to be honest with you, Scott. I'm sorry.
So this is how
I know that was my life goal in life, but it's not going to happen.
So this is how we're leading off episode 245. We are bringing the hottest Excel chat that we have. Next week we're covering PowerPoint, where I'm much stronger in PowerPoint. And the week after that, we're going to go to Microsoft Word. So you guys keep tuning in. You hold on to your butts, as Will Smith said.
If you fell in love with your freshman computer teacher, you'll love Verbal Shenanigans. That's your life goal. If you want slow and steady knowledge about how to bold things, well, you came to the right spot.
How are your are your typing skills like traditional, like where the teacher taught you, like home button? Or mine's like just whatever I figured out over the years. I type pretty fast, though, I gotta say.
I'm pretty good with the typing. When I went to high school, the teacher that was teaching typing, it was literally they would tape a sheet of paper on the keyboard, put it over your hands, not allow you to look at it. But like, really.
I thought for a second you're gonna say over your face.
Oh no, fire drill! I'm dead.
Mrs. Smith, can I take this off? You take it off. There's nobody in the class.
Damn it! Why did the school have to be on the third floor? Damn it!
Another kid lost in the typing wing.
Yeah, she was like uber serious about it. It's one of those every person who took her hate her, and then like a couple years later, you're like, all right, I got you. I'll give you a thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm like a mishmash of whatever I have figured out over the years on how to hit buttons quickly. But again, as we bring the hot fire, the real The real beefy topics, current events. We are killing episode 245.
Now, is there anything more painful than watching your parents doing the single finger type for 20 minutes do one?
Yeah. My mom, she's a pro. Like, she types faster than I. She went to, like, old school, like, secretary school, like Catherine Gibbs secretary, where they knew, like, shorthand and stuff like that. And, like, official secretarial work. And then...
Was she based off that girl in Mad Men?
Hold on, I'm being interrupted by the wife. What's up? It's in the bedroom. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Aw, that was the first wife interruption of the podcast. Before it was the girlfriend interruption, now it's the wife interruption.
It's always something. It's either a bulldog or, bulldog, girlfriend, wife, whatever. But what were we just saying?
I was just asking, was your mom based off that redheaded character from Mad Men?
Probably something similar along those lines, like back then, I imagine, considering she probably went in like the 70s, early 80s or whatever. So, yeah, I'd imagine something like that. Real
Did
sexist.
She have the big beehive hairdo, and it's like, Mr. Johnson, would you like some more coffee?
I guess
I could file the paperwork for
I don't
you.
Know about the beehive, but I'm sure she worked in quite a very misogynistic kind of hey Toots, fetch me another giggle water out of the fridge, would you, huh? And make sure those papers are on my desk. I'll see you in the afternoon with a little slap of the ass. I'll see you later at the meeting.
Ah, this is some good paperwork here. Good job. Now, why don't you get out of this building so I can watch you go leave the building with shaking your ass, okay?
Aisha Ash calling in again. Aisha.
Every time.
But I guess first off, and those of you who are just tuning in, we're usually pretty amazing at radio, but today might be a slip up. No.
You got a C+ today, folks. Well, we're just gonna put it out there.
we're gonna push through, and we're gonna get through this together, guys. We're gonna get through this together. But generally, we are a weekly podcast that generally Mondays is our release date, coming off a release of a band called 8mm, a wife and husband duo, and then also another guy named Jeff Whalen. So go check that out. We've had a lot of interesting and this week is no different. We have a very unique guest on the show, that is for sure. But I guess I'll start here. I wanted to ask you, so we've talked to so many interesting people over time, but it's funny, like, you know, we look for guests and email people for guests and email companies and this and that. And in fact, you finally broke through with a guest that we have been pushing
a year. But no spoilers.
No.
We'll
I'm not
get that next week. Yeah,
I am not saying that because we will it will jinx and we will not have it. Meanwhile, everyone's thinking, like, oh, my God, I wonder who. is it Troy Aikman? Is it Troy Aikman? Like, is someone. so we don't want to let you down either way is what we're saying. But
yeah,
we try to think of these interesting topics. And sometimes you meet people in life that have very interesting stories and you don't even realize, you know, who they are or what they do sometimes or the magnitude. So I wanted to tell you about three people that I've come across in the last 3 weeks that I thought had some interesting story. Okay.
Got random people show.
or maybe I could give you two real people and one fake person and see if you could figure out who is what. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I could do that.
Ooh. This is the part where there should be entertainment.
I'm just going to tell you about people I know. So
improv skills back at work.
So 2 weeks ago, at the Brennan wedding, if you will. So Alex's maid of honor is from Canada, and I had never met her before because she's been in Canada and we've been here and we just never have gotten together. And everybody's been busy. And so the night before the girls had, or two nights before, they had like a little like bachelorette for Alex. So the girls went out. Actually, they came in on Thursday, and that was when the Tap House 15 comedy show was going on. And I met her boyfriend, Joey. So I knew a little bit about him. But what's interesting is Joey, he played a little like professional football up in Canada. But he, in the recent years, was committed himself fully to becoming a Canadian bobsledder.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I asked him.
So he was a CFLer.
Yeah. He played, did a little bit of CFL. And I didn't know the rules were so different in the CFL. Three downs.
Yeah, they got a huge end zone. It's like, I think it's like 20 yards, the end zone. So there's a lot of passes where they just go through the uprights and to the other side for a touchdown.
Yeah, I was talking to him. He was a running back for, I don't know, either a pro team or the next level under. You know, with three downs, you don't traditionally run the ball up the gut too often. It's a lot of passing, a lot of routes out the back and stuff like that to gain yardage because you only get three downs. But what was more interesting was he was in the Olympics. He made the Olympic team. I guess, so what is it, 2019? So it was the Winter Olympics in 18? Just whatever this last one was.
I think it was 16.
No, I think it was whatever the last one was.
Didn't the summer one just occur?
No, that's coming up. I think 2020 is the summer. Whatever Pyeongchang was. Looked it up while I talk. So we don't sound complete idiots. But it's really interesting talking to him. So the next day they went out for their little bachelorette thing. And I said, hey, dude, I got nothing really going on. You know, I got to get some things done during the day. Do you want to go out for some so a drink and just hang out? I was like, yeah, sure. And right away, we like hit it off, like pure bromance right away. But it was really interesting. I am going to bring him on the show one day. He told me he would call in. But some of the stuff really, really, really interesting on, you know, you think Canada and the Winter Olympics, you think royal treatment, you know, you think that's their big thing. It's the Winter Olympics. It's Canada. It's bobsled, you know. And listening to how much commitment, you know, 5-6 days a week, training all the time, learning the sport and getting paid almost nothing, you know, just stipend money, on their own for food, on their own for traveling to different places. And it was really neat talking to him about, you know, getting to the Olympic Village and whatnot. And how it was just like they were pretty much treated like crap the whole time. And just hearing the commitment to make, you know, and I'm not exactly, I can't remember if he was the fifth guy on the team, kind of like the alternate or whatever. But he did make it to the opening ceremonies and whatnot. But hearing how they treat the athletes was very interesting. There's really no money to be made. So it's a very huge sacrifice because it's not like you could be working really on the side too much when you're 6 days a week and you're traveling all over. They were in Germany training for a year. Very, very interesting stuff.
I was just thinking about that. It would have kind of sucked him being an alternate. Like he's about to walk into the Olympic Village for the flag ceremony and everything. It's like, hey, Alti, get out blind. This is for real Olympians number five.
You go to the alternate housing.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but so really fascinating. And it's almost weird when you meet someone who does something like that and you're hanging out with them for 4 days straight or whatever, like seeing them every day. And we started to get like, I don't know, kind of close. Or like the joke was like, oh, you guys are going to like miss each other when when he leaves. And, but it's hard when you meet someone like that to not constantly ask them the same questions that they probably hear all the time and not make it like an interview, you know, like it's probably like, yeah. And then, of course, like my dad meets him as we're eating breakfast, like all the guys are eating breakfast or whatever, and he's asking him the same questions. And then I hear someone else talking like, oh, really? Like, and then, of course, my big mouth, like, you know, it's after the wedding, a couple beers. It's like, and my friends are there at the bar or whatever, at the after party. I'm like, oh, you know, Joey here, he's a Canadian bobsled. Oh, no way. And the same questions happen over and over again. But I think if we got him on the show, I think he would be a pretty interesting interview from the stuff he was telling me. He's really cool.
Did he give you the Jesus Christ, why did you tell everybody what I do kind of looks?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, no, actually, he was like nothing but a gentleman with the answers. And I think he understands that, one, here in another country where bobsledding is like no one knows anything about it. Two, you're doing something like the Olympics. In a certain way, I'm sure he's proud to talk about it, too. But yeah, he was really lifting the veil on what you think maybe Olympic athletes get treated. He's like, nothing, you know, not good at all. So
really,
yeah,
they don't. What is it that they don't give a damn, or they just figure they're more important things, or what?
Yeah, I don't know. Just like he really seemed to think there was just like not a lot of funding, and like the treatment of the team wasn't very good. Like, it was all about the bigger sports, you know, like that they really seemed to give a crap about. But so that was an interesting person, one, that I came across this week. Okay.
It would have been interesting if you ran out of things to talk about and then you re-listened to our podcast with the Jamaican bobsledder and you were re-asking him those questions.
Funny you say that. I told him, I said, Devin Harris has been on the podcast twice. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, I met Devin a bunch of times. He's like, really nice guy. He's like, he's very involved in, like, trying to grow the sport in, like, Jamaica and urban area. So it was pretty cool. It was like another verbal shenanigans tie-in.
You play football? Did you? No, I talked to Joe Jacoby of the Washington Redskins.
Now, second person I thought that was interesting that I came across today. Now, this is a guy I went to high school with. So, you know, I've known him loosely. I remember his friend played – my friends played in a band with him. He was a drummer, and he was always into horrors, like special effects and stuff like that, even as a kid. And he went on to work in special effects. He works for some kind of special effects house or studio, or it was something along those lines. His Instagram pictures are always like some kind of mask they're making or some kind of, so cool stuff, right? So the other day I'm scrolling through Instagram and I see a post, and it is this dented up Iron Man mask. Okay. Mm-hmm. And very similar to the one that was in Endgame, okay? The one, you know, at the beginning where he's talking to the mask, and the mask is projecting the things and whatever, and it's all torn up. And so, and the mask in the picture is behind, like, glass, kind of like in a museum setting. And I read the caption, and he's like, oh, we got to see our baby today or whatever behind at some kind of Marvel, like, pop-up exhibit or whatever, blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay. What does he mean? And there's a couple pictures. Like, it's one of those Instagram posts that have like a few pictures in it.
Yep.
And sure enough, like the next thing I read on, it's like, oh, it was such an honor for blah 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 and to work on such a cool thing. And I scrolled to his profile beforehand, and the picture shows that image of Robert Downey Jr. You know, on the ground, kind of talking to the mask, that kind of opening scene. And then I scroll through again, and I see him with gloves on, working on this thing. And then I scroll to the next one, and it's the mask, like, blinking, kind of flickering and stuff like that. Sure enough, it wasn't just them making a model, but they actually had the task of making the mask for the movie.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. See, if I was making that, I would put a camera in there and make sure I recorded everything on set. And then, like, a week before launch, I'll be like, all right, you give me $500 million or I'm going to spoil it for everybody.
But, I mean, what a small world. Like, first off, what an honor for him. I messaged him. I said, Dan, that's, like, awesome. And he's like, yeah, man, thank you so much. Like, you know, But to get to be chosen, I mean, that's like if you're going to be talking about – that might be like an iconic piece one day. You know, like, you know, long – couple years down the road, there's a Marvel museum, which I'm sure there will be at some point, which would actually be pretty cool if they did like the old comics and the old movies and then this whole universe. That's like a prop that would stand out, like the Endgame. Like that's the first opening scene, the first trailer. So they had they made the mask that was in the movie. So I thought that was interesting. Person number two. I thought you were going to say if you made the mask, you would be like cutting up paper plates and string and like.
Is that glued macaroni on you? This is a billion-dollar movie. What the hell? Why we cut corners here? We literally have a guy who's a large green man on a computer, and we went with this dude?
Who is this Michael Berlew that you hired to make Iron Man's mask?
You idiot! That's Batman you made! What the hell? Oh, I knew it was one of them. I got Spider-Man lamp, by the way. It's an FYI.
Congrats, pal. Congrats.
Yeah, and you have...
Now,
awesome.
Now, do you turn it on next to your race car bed, or is it in a separate room?
It's currently in the man cave. I had to get a light bulb for it to shine up, but we stuck a flashlight up it just to see what it looks like when it's lit up. So, you know, it's growing, the excitement, and the timing of once I go to Home Depot and figure out how to ask him which light bulb it is without, and then got 42-year-old man with a Spider-Man light.
At least you could just be like, "Yeah, my son really loves my son really loves Spider-Man."
They don't know me too well. They could fall for it. And I'm just texting that picture over to you.
Oh, great! Thank you so much. I'll have to look at it later because right now I'm seeing your face through my cellular telephone.
So you have a prize at the end of this prize.
Yeah. third person, before we get to our guest here. Third person, so I've been trying. I guess I can't say I met him this week because I guess I really didn't meet the other guy this week either. I guess it was something I just saw. But for years, my dad had his own repair shop. Not a repair shop, car stereo installation and security shop in Bayonne for over 25 years. And he worked next to this guy. I won't give his name out, but he owned a tire company next door to him. They came, you replace tires, to get tire work done. And so I've been trying to get this guy on the podcast, not the tire guy. and I'm revealing.
What's it like making circles?
It might be more entertaining than our Excel conversation, but.
no spoilers, but Vizio's coming down the road, ladies and gentlemen. But continue, Scott.
So I'm talking to my dad, and I'm like, "Oh, I really want to get blah 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 on the podcast. I know he's from Bayonne. He's from not Captain Bayonne, Berlin. Before we already got him, we already landed that fish." Oh God, please don't.
You gotta listen to that podcast to figure that out, people. I'm not giving you hints.
Yeah, that's a fun one though, if you guys are interested in just complete asinine behavior from everybody involved. That's a great podcast. But you gotta go back, Captain Bayonne, hear all about him. So long story short, I'm like, you know, I really want to get Chuck Wepner on the podcast. Okay. The Bayonne Bleeder, he fought Muhammad Ali, inspired Rocky. So on and so on and so on. I think Vice or ID, one of them had a movie on in the last year or two. It was actually pretty good. I was watching it. It came on randomly. I've been trying to get him like find him online. He's getting very old. Chuck Wepner's getting up there in age. And when I was younger, my dad knew Chuck Wepner. He was actually a liquor salesman in Bayonne. He stayed in Bayonne, and my dad would do the work on his car and whatnot. And then my dad's like, "Well, why didn't you tell me? Like, this guy, blah, 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 who worked next to me all this time represents him and, like, hangs out with him and stuff." I'm like, "Really?" And, like, yeah. He's like, yeah. He's like, he takes care of all his, like, affairs and money and stuff like that. And sure enough, like, this guy that I knew as the tire guy is representing Chuck Wepner, who is, you know, the Bayonne Bleeder himself. So I've been working – now I've been massaging this for about a year. But I, the only reason I'm bringing up this now is just because we were talking about him the other day. But, you know, Berlow, the moral of this whole thing is – there's interesting people, even like, you know, in everyday life. The more you talk, that whole, what is it, 7 degrees of separation kind of thing. it's just crazy. Like a guy I went to high school with is connected to the Marvel Endgame, you know, like my wife, her best friend is dating a bobsledder. Like it's just pretty cool. That was kind of the whole point of the journey.
There's really cool people out there, yet we spend every week talking to each other. Yeah. The moral of the story is we don't make good decisions in life.
That's why we're going to do nothing but episodes like Christian Okoye, Randy Santel, and Devin Harris on one episode.
Exactly. Just shove them all into one. The people will love the 3-hour podcast format.
Yeah.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
It was funny. I was looking at that the other day. We were in this one. I think the reason we put all three of them together, if you look at the episodes before and after, we were on this hot streak of guests during that time that was ridiculous. And I think at one point we had like 6 or 7 like backed up in the bank and recorded. So I was like, you know, we got to put these out and get them out. But that is quite an episode. Randy Santel, Christian Okoye, and Devin Harris.
Yeah, and to add to the backstory that day, we literally went into the day with no guests, and then we came out with all three on that night.
That's like the one night we went into with no guests, and we came out with Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah. I still say you should continue to try to call that number, because I got a feeling he's going to go back to that burner phone, and we're going to get him on again.
And, well, Berlow, we could try to call him right now. Well, actually, I can't. I can't through the Skype connection right now.
Dang it.
Not gonna do that. So yeah, Berlow. I guess it's that time. It's guest time right now.
Best time of all.
As we speak of guests, Berlow, who we got this week? This is kind of interesting.
This week we got Commissioner and Managing Director of the World Air League, Donald R. Hartzell. And he's going to be joining us to talk about this world blimp race, for lack of a better term, around the world called the World Sky Race. And we're going to be chatting with him on something he's been working on since 2006. And he's setting up teams. And it's going to be interesting to talk to him about how he organizes and what the goals are for the league.
Yep. It's definitely interesting. What have you been on that goes in the air? I have been on a hot air balloon, which I've described on this podcast before, and I want to ask him something. And basically a plane, I guess, would be the two things I've been on.
I think those are the only two. I think when I was a baby, they took me on a helicopter ride, and I apparently cried through the entire ride. I mean, I was 18 at the time. I was very scared.
Well, that's what you keep referring to as your baby years, age 0 through 18.
Yeah. We're getting close to maturity, Scott. We're almost there. Another couple decades, and I'll be right there ready to be the man of the house.
Says the guy who just told me about his Spider-Man lamp.
Hey, I got 20 years to enjoy this thing. Let me slide.
Well, let's get Don on the phone. On the phone? On the line? On the line.
Let's just talk to him.
Hello?
Hey, is this Don?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Don, it's Scott from the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
I did not recognize the number.
Oh, yeah.
My normal reaction is I've got a robocall coming. And so what I end up doing is I'm generally silent for about 2 seconds, and then I'll say hello. and that actually gets rid of them.
Yeah, for a second I thought I was just like waking you up or something. But don't worry, we are not. We are not selling you anything.
too bad. I'm fine.
Well, you can buy one of our T-shirts at the end of the show. Hold on, all right. let me merge Mike in real quick. Mike, Mike, you should hear Don. Don thought I was a telemarketer. So so Mike, this is where Mike comes in. We call him the closer. He tells you all about the.
I'm Scott's manager here. I understand you're into some timeshares. That's wonderful to hear.
Well, actually, I was looking for a good set of pots and pans.
Oh, well, we had that too. We're very unique in what we offer here at Verbal Shenanigans. So,
all right.
So, Don, thank you for joining us and all. I guess you just said when we were arranging this, you were coming over to the States. Where are you at and where do you originate from, out of curiosity?
Well, I live in Texas, and I've been here all my life and a few generations in front of me as well. So it's this is home.
Oh, okay. You must have been – were you across the ocean there for a little bit there? Or?
Oh, I travel all the time, and it's always a matter of us to – How long am I at home before, frankly, I got to go somewhere else?
Yeah, well let's start at right at the beginning. You know, what is about this fascination about a world air race and all? Because even as we were figuring out new guests and coming across you and figuring this out, just by saying world air race, it just brings to mind either like a 1917 movie or maybe a 2000 comedy reboot with like Seth Green and Whoopi Goldberg. So what brought us to this point?
It's a lifelong daydream that I finally decided to act on. And it's a daydream that is the result of my having hitchhiked from Texas to see the American Bicentennial in 1976. And that entire period of celebration was just really a fantastic moment where we all got to just pat ourselves on the back and eat some really terrible, actually great hot dogs and watch fireworks and get together. And as a result of our deciding that we were a great nation, we wanted to celebrate it. And I ended up basically hitchhiking to Washington, D.C. to be at the official opening of the Bicentennial at our archives in front of the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, our Constitution, and the officiating administration was President Ford, Vice President Rockefeller, and Secretary Henry Kissinger. And so we were all in the National Archives signing a document that's going to be opened up at the tricentennial 100 years later. And so from there, I went up to New York for watching the final closing of the Bicentennial. Now as the tall ships coming down the Hudson River. And as I'm standing on Manhattan Island, waiting for these ships and all their majestic sails coming down the river, I'm looking over just a little to the south, Liberty Island, and just above the outstretched torch of the Statue of Liberty, the Goodyear blimp was flying over, almost touching it, is the way it looked. Huh. And so as I snapped that photograph in my old 35-millimeter camera, I'm wishing that these tall ships, which were north on the Hudson River, were in the same frame with the Statue of Liberty and the Goodyear blimp. And so as I clicked it, I was wishing those ships were there. And every time I'd look at that photograph, I'd actually see what was not in it, you know, those ships. And then I came to realize that photograph, and it came, you know, was basically a realization of fireworks, pomp, circumstance, music, kids playing, men smiling, beautiful women, blue skies, and those tall ships not being in that same photo. And so out of that irritation, I actually decided I'd have a race of airships around the world.
No, you see something like that, but at that point, did you have, like, what is your background in as far as aviation, as far as flying? Were you, was this something always part of your life, or was that the moment that got you into that?
Well, aviation never was a part of my life until I started doing this project.
Huh.
You know, basically, I'm 23 years old, and I'm just kind of got had graduated with an accounting degree, and I was just more or less doing what you do, and that is running a column of pros and cons. And so, you know, this is how the list went. Don, this is a damn good idea. And then on the other side of the ledger was, you know, you don't have a job. You've never been around the world. You don't know anybody. You don't know anybody who knows anybody. And on top of all that, you don't have any money. So I just put it into the daydream category. And the rest of my professional career grew. And I did not realize that my professional career was actually preparing me to start and conduct and commission this race. And so at the conclusion of my last project, where I was digitizing about 8 million historical documents for the Texas Archives and converting them into an internet research database, I had a lot of time on my hands to think about what it was I wanted to do. And I had reached that point at the conclusion of that project, getting to simply say, what do you want to do next? And this is the project that I had been thinking about the longest, and had given probably more daydreaming to than all the others. So it kind of won the business plan prize.
Hmm. Interesting. And when you're envisioning this, what do you see this race as? Do you see it more as a sport? Do you see it like kind of a technology world's fair event? Where do you kind of focus your goals on seeing this event through?
Well, first and foremost, you know, it's to mainly have fun. But the thing is, you and I, we're all adults now, and adults have to justify what they're doing. And so it can't be just simply fun. And so I have looked at this, and I have analyzed it as I would. And there's two facets to it. Actually, there's three. I mean, first of all, above everything is Earth, that the biggie. And then we have education, another E. And then we have the environment, yet another E. And then finally, we get right back to the word fun. It's called epic, and that's an E. And so the environmental side of this project is immense. And sometimes we have learned that in order to take a step into the future, we do have to go back to the past and reinvent the past to be more appropriate for now and the future. And so the environmental side of this race is explained as an engineer would. And that is, to move a pound per mile or a kilogram per kilometer, and it doesn't matter what language you speak, it takes 75 to 80% less fuel than it does an airplane. Airplanes, what they do is they spend 90% of their energy just simply to get in the air and 10% to go forward. And so all that energy goes into lift. And airships, by definition, are lighter than air. And so they're not spending any energy to get into the air. Instead, it's simply to go forward. And so it's really simple physics. It's called buoyancy. And so an airship, by using 75 to 80% less energy, it also produces 75 to 80% less pollution. And those two factors alone are immense and just completely justifying. But as they say, wait, there's more. And that wait, there's more is essentially airships are extremely transformative for our future and our future development in terms of globalization, connecting communities, and being able to move cargo, those things that bind societies together, and do so efficiently. And this is how it works out. Is, does an airship, does it need a harbor? The answer is no. Does it need a bridge? The answer is no. Does it need a railway terminal? The answer is no. Does it even need a runway to land on? And the answer again is no. And so all the elements of infrastructure, the transportation grid that binds our world together, those are elements that are not needed in a world where airships deliver our goods. And so what we are speaking of is every government in the world knows what the four costs of infrastructure are. The first is taking the land, it's called eminent domain. The second is the construction, and the third is the maintenance costs, and that cost typically outweighs the first two, you know, in terms of enormity. And now there's recognized a fourth cost, and that is, you know, dredging out that harbor, destroying those wetlands, ripping apart the tundra, pulling out the rainforest. All those are the destructive elements of infrastructure in support of our transportation grid. And not one of those costs needs to be incurred with airships moving our goods. And so an airship doesn't merely replace the last mile of roads. It replaces the last 1,000 miles of roads. And so that's somewhat sums up where airships can basically revolutionize the way we conduct ourselves in this century. And we can look at green, lighter than aviation, as a means for that connection. And most people will say, well, aren't they slow? And let's go back to the 1930s when airships were moving people and goods as intercontinental airline services, transatlantic airline services. And the Zeppelins of that day, they could move 120 people with in terms of passengers and another 180 crew, in other words, a total of 300 people. And they moved at 130 miles an hour. And, you know, the airships of that day had lifting capacity of 250 tons. And so what we're looking at is the second fastest means of transportation being 75 to 80% more efficient and also not incurring the environmental costs of all the infrastructure associated with the transportation grid. I think that sums up where the impact is, and it's actually quite amazing. The educational side of this race, again, we have to justify it because, you know, we're adults. The educational side
debatable. Debatable.
It is indeed. Well, first of all, this is a sporting entertainment event.
Right.
But when you put the educational component that we are developing into it, it just suddenly makes this thing universal. Universal in that we will be able, with our sponsors, to provide for the 59 million teachers in the world a site on the web where they can go and download the daily lesson plan, and they can use that lesson plan to walk into their classroom and not be just a good teacher, but hopefully an inspiring teacher. They'll get to ask the question, where are the airships today? Hmm. And with that, they get to launch into history, geography, culture, science, the environment, mathematics. Whatever the relevant topic is, this thread ties them together. And so we're going to be creating a tapestry for education in that as we go around the world and the daily lesson plans are available to teachers, those classrooms, they're going to be all talking about the same thing at the same time. And so we're going to be providing for the next generation a common bond that they will forever share. And it doesn't matter what age they'll be when they meet, they will have discussed the World Sky Race and they will know where they were and they'll have talked about the same thing. And so this common bond of education, they will share for the remainder of their lives, and we have no idea what the dividends of that will be.
It's pretty cool to, you know, you hear World Air Race, which obviously we have some questions about that, and I kind of think of like all these different things that, like, what's the Red Bull flu tog? They have these things to try to make, you know, like these kind of create your own kind of soapbox derby throwback kind of, you know, stuff like that. But it's cool to see that you are also obviously tying that into a way bigger picture than just, just a couple of hobbyists trying to make, you know, something that flies. But I want to ask you, obviously, I don't know a lot, and Mike might be an expert, but who knows? But I don't know. What, as far as airships, like we think of, when you think of stuff like this, we think of hot air balloons, and we think of Zeppelins and things like that. But what are, like, what is one, like, just the definition of that? And two, what are the varieties that people have no idea about or people would see in this race? And, like, could you describe some of them for, like, an audience who has no idea what the possibilities are of this race?
Well, I'm glad you use the term soapbox derby, because that's exactly how I characterize this race. It is come one, come all, and you have to be an airship in order to participate in this race.
Okay.
And an airship itself, it comprises of three classes of aircraft. One's called a blimp, and we all know, let's say, the Goodyear blimp, the Snoopy MetLife blimp. And a blimp is basically a lighter-than-air ship that is a series of balloons within balloons. And that's, in essence, what a blimp is. Now, a dirigible is an airship that has a keel that goes through the interior of it, gives it a semi-rigid structure and something to attach the envelope around. And a Zeppelin is far more complex. It has a framework inside it and an envelope wrapped around it and a series of compartments within that for controlling air buoyancy and just basically being able to seal off different sections of it. But all of them together are in that category of lighter than air. In other words, they derive their lift from a light gas, which would, you know, it's in this instance, we're talking about helium. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at, in essence, utilizing these airships in an entertaining way, in a most fascinating sporting way, in looking at this race as being potentially their revival, and for that matter, an incubator for technology that is going to propel this industry forward with the entire world watching. And so the goal of this race is not only to entertain, but also to fundamentally show to the entire world, humanity, and in particular the next generation, that there's a green path that they need to explore. And so this race is all about the future in creating a conversation where the evolution of airships return to our normal lives.
Interesting. So I know the World Air League, you founded in 2006, and you're aiming to get at least five teams signed up by 2020 to try for 2021-22. What has been the biggest hurdle right now in organizing this, and how do you see the competitors coming in? Is it something like a regular race team, or is it something like a manufacturer of a certain aircraft coming into this?
Well, what we're doing right now is team formation, and we're organizing the teams along storylines, or more in particular around nationalities or civic pride. And our goal, because there's not a group of consistent airship fans out there. I mean, everyone loves looking up at airships, but there's not this group of fandom that is dedicated to, you know, saying their team is the best and they're going to, you know, wax this team and that team. Yeah. So what we are looking at doing is organizing each team around either a continent, a nation, a region, a state, a city. And in so doing, have automatically the fan base that is supportive of that geographical area. And let them put their pride and their hopes and into supporting that team. So our goal is team formation. And right now we're looking predominantly at the national level, and we have the first team being formed, and it's the French team. And essentially, we're looking for corporate sponsors, foundations to get behind the organizing the team so that way they can start talking smack. And
I like that you went from like 400 science terms in the last 10 minutes to just straight up old school talking smack. It like really brought it all together for me and warmed my heart.
Well, you know, in this arena, you're going to find some of the wildest people. First of all, to be in the lighter than air business, it's a Darwinian element of self-selection. And interesting people are almost always involved with airships. And they come in all stripes, flavors, and characteristics, but they do share one thing in common. They are interesting people.
Well, with the race itself, do you see it like just a big marathon, or is it like NASCAR where it's stage racing? How do you organize this?
Well, the closest comparison or the closest analogy would be the Volvo Ocean Race, which is a series of staged races between ports of call. Or, you know, let's say the Tour de France, which is a day of racing between villages to villages along the Tour of the France. And so this is going to be a series of staged events. And if you will, envision, let's say, our starting point, which is at the Greenwich Prime Meridian in front of the atomic clock where all time on Earth is synchronized. That's our starting point. And we're starting at the lawn of the National Maritime Museum, one of the UNESCO World Heritage Sites, and basically, you know, where we derive our sense of synchronized time. There's going to be a curtain of laser lights. The airships will fly through that colorized, lasered atmosphere, and they're onward, and they're heading immediately to Berlin. And they have a couple of waypoints that they have to specifically fly over in terms of it being a standardized race route. And those points that they have to fly over are UNESCO World Heritage Sites. And so as we chart this race route, these airships are flying those specific points, and they have to fly over them in order to qualify for that part of the race. And thereby, we have a means to say they flew the same route, and it's all going to be based on timing. And so the first race is from London to Berlin. We arrive in Berlin. We take the time. And then we have two or three fun days in Berlin, and that's a great town to have a party in. I will tell you that right now. But we're arriving on probably the most important party day in Germany, and that is October 3rd. And October 3rd is German Unification Day, our 4th of July. And so we will be the crown event in the skies of Berlin, having brought and assembled the largest fleet of airships ever over their skies. Huh. And so the next race, and that's race number one. And what that does is it generates for us immediately 86 million German fans, because if you look at the German's DNA, do you know what you'll find in it?
What's that?
Beer.
A Zeppelin.
Oh.
Yeah, you will find a Zeppelin in every German's DNA. And I mean, it is their pride. It is what they created, what they gave to the world. And so every German is just literally fascinated with these. And so we're bringing the race to them first for that very reason. And so from Berlin, it's on to the Roman Colosseum. We've secured the landing rights at the Great Pyramids in Egypt. We get to fly over Petra in Jordan, and then it's on to Abu Dhabi. And then from there, we get to fly over the Taj Mahal, the Twin Towers of Malaysia, and it's Halong Bay. And so as we make our way around the world, we are creating a tapestry that connects the entire world.
I mean, there's a lot I want to ask you, but I guess
it goes in every direction. I mean, this is a kaleidoscope conversation, so there isn't anything that's out of limits, and every bit of it is interesting.
I guess, you know, okay, so years ago I worked for a TV station doing some film work and whatnot. We filmed in New Jersey here. We have the Quick Check Hot Air Balloon Festival. And it's this big air balloon festival, and got to go up on hot air balloon for the first time and film and whatever. And that was kind of a crazy experience, like, because one filming, like, I'm like 6 foot four, and the basket definitely only like went up to my thigh, so that was kind of a weird experience. So I did not like that, but I did love the experience of learning how the thing was piloted and how they land and when. Now, my question, I'm picturing this air race and how you're saying things are finishing at certain cities and whatnot. And I know they were saying, as far as the hot air balloons, they were only able to, you know, there's no real steering, and they're only going with the wind, with the wind direction and whatnot. Like, how do you guys plan that? And then I remember the pilot also saying they would just land, and I remember we landed in someone's backyard, and they had a team that. How do you guys work that, as far as, like, where you said the one category is the ones that are just taken by air when on that? As far as the steering and getting from point to point to point, do you guys have people get lost way off track? Give us a little insight into that part of the race.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, an airship is a navigable aircraft.
Okay.
It has engines with propellers. It has rudders, and it has a tail. And so basically it is steerable. And so the question it has typically in terms of how quickly it gets there is whether it has a headwind or a tailwind.
Okay.
And that is probably the biggest differentiation in speed, but generally they'll get there. And so when you get right down to it, you know, they file a flight plan with the Civil Aviation Authority, and they pretty much stick to it. And so from the perspective of being like a balloon, this is where airships are very similar to balloons. And that is, you know, balloon, you have to have that landing crew there to grab you, so that, you know, you don't go whisking off into wherever. And so you have to have somebody physically there to hold you down so you don't go flying or floating away. And the same is true with an airship, at least in the current technological configuration. And we can talk about the future in a moment. But right now, what you have to have is a ground crew that is fairly agile and hefty at the same time. And they need to be able to grab the ropes that hold the airship down while somebody is starting to throw ballast on it to weigh it down so it doesn't go floating light away like a kid's balloon that got let go. And so that's really the art of landing in airship.
Now that makes sense.
Now, with the path that you're talking about for the race itself, tell us a little bit about like the work you have to do with like the local government. So, when I read on your site, for example, I see that one of the partners in the World Air Race or the World Sky Race is the Prince of Jordan as well.
His Royal Highness Prince Faisal bin Hussein is our royal patron for Jordan. And that ensures that we will definitely be flying over Petra. And I was meeting with Prince Hussein when I first was introduced to him. And I said, you know, I'd like to see Petra from maybe about 2,000 feet or 600 meters, because that's going to be the position that we would be looking at from the airships. So the next day, I am on a Jordanian military reconnaissance helicopter mission, flying over the Dead Sea and into the Wadi Rum Desert and over Petra at about 2,000 feet. And so it's an amazing place to see, particularly with that perspective in mind. And so what we are doing in terms of creating relationships in the world at large is getting people to be enthusiastic, to open their doors, and have the hospitality to invite these airships into their country, so that way They literally are given the chance to show off and take the world center stage. And our goal is to present the world to itself.
How long do you think the race in total will take to go around the world?
Well, in a perfect world, in other words, perfect weather, we could do this entire race in about 22 to 24 days. Instead, it's around the world in 180 days. And it's done for many reasons in that length of time. One, it's perfect to, in that it starts in September, ends in May, so it's a school year. The other is, and this is probably far, far more important, is that the route that we have picked and the generalized weather conditions that we expect to encounter will facilitate the race and, or not impede it. And I'm not sure which one is prior in that, but in any case, what we're looking for are the best conditions in a general way for us to conduct this race. And one of the reasons that it's around the world in 180 days instead of 22, 24 days is that allows us to take weather in as a factor because, frankly, the weather controls. And so envision, if you would, 16 races, each of them roughly 10, 12 days in length. In a race, it might consist of anywhere between 9 hours to 76 hours in total. So subtract that from 10 days, and that gives us 2 to 3 days of having a lot of fun wherever we are stopped and have festivities in those places where we're stopped. And then that gives us about another 5 days in which we are like surfers. Surfers waiting for the best weather wave to catch. And that allows us to move forward and be within our schedule. And so it gives us a lot of leeway for what nature is going to be providing along the route, but it also provides the challenges of being best in doing your meteorology and other elements that are extremely important for this race.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, it's just you know, something we don't get to hear about too often, and we see what you're doing now. My question for you is obviously nowadays with technology and social media and the ability to track things and send live video, is that what you guys use to really gain new fans and whatnot? Because like I feel like something like this could be really fun to track online and know what's going on and see videos of where people are at and the weather reports. And I could see it all coming together in a modern broadcast package, like any other sport, like anything that we always said, oh, that'll never take off. And then all of a sudden, you know, at one point poker was on TV every day on every channel and you couldn't get away from it. What is the future of this sport and how are you getting it to the masses?
We're looking at social media being one of the major elements of what this race is about. And that's basically starting a global conversation. And when a global conversation starts, you have no idea what directions it's going to take. But we're going to be moving it along every day as the race moves along the path of the world. And there's different areas of engagement where we will be utilizing the media and the technology as it is blossoming now. And I'll give you a couple of examples. I mean, one, we're going to be able to, from these camera platforms, which is what airships are, we're going to be able to have beneath the gondola one of those cameras that films everything in 360 degrees. And so we will have the race route of the entire world seen from any angle from those cameras. And so if you take your iPad and you look up, you'll see the gondola above you. If you look down, you'll see Victoria Falls, or the Great Pyramids, or the Taj Mahal, and all the horizon in between. And so that's one aspect of this technology and the social media. Another is the point of view that NASA has told us that we're going to be able to claim. And that is, we will be able to watch this race as it progresses across our planet. We will watch it from satellites from space. And so as the shadows of the airships fly, you know, cast on the Taj Mahal, we're going to be looking down at that from above. And so that's a unique perspective. And then inside the cabins, we're going to have interactive feeds where people can chat with at given times the crew as they are making their way around the world. So it's going to be highly interactive. But at the educational level, what's going to happen is, as we fly over the planet, the schools that get selected that are beneath the airships on that day, that class is presenting the educational program, and those kids are smiling and the rest of the world is smiling with them and hearing them laugh, those kids on that day aren't going to be just simply leaders of their classroom. They're going to be global leaders. 2-3 million other children, students around the world are going to be tuned in to what it is that they're saying about themselves. And in so doing, we are creating a whole new class of global leaders.
It's just, it's really amazing how you tell this story, how it went from just seeing something, a blimp in New York City, to this vision and going through with everything to make this happen. It's really amazing. We really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and we definitely want to try to bring you on as you get closer to getting these events going. If people wanted to talk to you or hear more about the race, where can they go to go see you?
Well, basically, it's really very simple. It's worldskyrace.com. Think of the world like in the globe, sky like the air above, and race like a very fierce competition. Worldskyrace.com. And one thing I have to say is, I had a good idea about a race of airships around the world, but everything that we have discussed this evening was somebody else's idea. Somebody else added to this to make it bigger, better, and more interesting. And that is how this race has grown organically.
Yeah. I mean, I just hear it in your voice. I hear the, you know, the passion you have for it, and the, you know, how it's, you guys seem to have, I could say I'm going to throw a bunch of people in the air and race, but you seem to have figured out the, you know, the quirks and how to get by with it. So I really hope one day we are looking at, like I said, we're checking in on Facebook to see where you're flying about, or where the French team's flying about, or, you know, we're rooting for, you know, the Americans to finish first, and well, someone gets disqualified for doing something stupid, you know, like
like bumping into somebody.
Exactly. Now, I got to say, I wrote this down on my little pad while you were talking right from the beginning. Your whole story reminded me, have you ever seen the movie Up?
Yes, I have. And that's a great movie.
That's a
superb movie.
Fantastic storytelling, but the character, when you're talking about the you know, seeing the World's Fair and getting inspired and coming up with this whole thing, that's really what it kind of reminds me of, that, and like I guess the innocence of the beginning of it, and then where it really could possibly go, and obviously we hope it goes there. If you guys do get it there, could we have a verbal shenanigans balloon? Like a NASCAR, like we could put our logo on the side of one.
Now, that's a good question. It is all about sponsorship. So I will throw it back and say, be a sponsor and be a part of the race. And this is what we
What say. If we just broadcast, we race, do a live yes. podcast from a Zeppelin?
Absolutely. That would be perfect. In every toast that we have, when we raise our glass, we simply say, embrace the race.
It's awesome. And so, now this question is going to totally come out of absolutely nowhere and have nothing, okay. nothing to do with air racing, nothing to do with you, nothing. Well, it will have to. Now we've had this debate here on the podcast, me and Mike, and we stopped asking guests a while ago because I was losing really bad. but we like to ask. Now you're from Texas, but you seem to be able to go all over the world. What are your thoughts, okay, on pineapples on pizza? Are you into it or are you not?
Okay, I was in Hawaii this last Thanksgiving, and I had pineapple on pizza.
Yes.
For the first time in my life.
Yes.
Against all of my predilections, against all of my prejudices, it was good.
Yeah.
Oh.
Now, I have to say this in favor of pineapple in Hawaii. It's damn good with everything.
I
That's an asterisk, Scott.
No. Now, Don, me and Mike have a conversation going, like, when we do this, like you know, if we hit on the same question or question we have to ask, and the one thing I said, I bet this guy loves pineapple pizza, as you were talking, and then I said, you want to have a friendly bet, and Mike said, sure, and I've been the minority for so long in so many of these, so one, I want to thank you so much for coming on this show, and two, thank you so much for finally being in my corner and being with the real people who like to experiment, the people who have imaginations, Don, the people who dream up big events and are open to new things on their pizza. Unlike Mike, who's an old curmudgeon who will just, he'll just, you know, sit there and never experiment, never really open up to what's out there.
This is what I told myself before I took my first trip around the world. And I'm at the age 28. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, you're going to at least try everything that is put in front of you to eat. You're going to at least try it. And there's simply several things that I will never try again in my life, but I tried them. And I do believe you got to try them in order to know that you hate them.
See, I agree.
Live by.
I agree.
Definitely.
Don, thank you so much for coming on. It really is fascinating. I'd love if you guys do get closer and as you guys do get this thing off the ground. Because you know what? I think you will in some capacity. I really do believe that.
Well, we have all kinds of things that make me think that's happening. I mean, after all, we have $1 million prize.
$1 million prize. Mike, we could probably make something.
That's a carrot for sure to try in, but it has been the result of consistent effort and putting energy into this that we have gotten as far as we have and to where we are right now. And so to see team formation finally starting, it makes my heart sore.
And it should, man. And you have a lot of passion for it, and it comes through just talking about it. And we really want to thank you for giving us the time on the show. We really had a fun time talking to you, and good luck with everything you got going on.
All right. Well, I look forward to it, and shoot me the links on how I can put it and link it to our website, so that way others can hear what we've discussed.
100%. Berlu, I knew it. I sensed something in his voice. I even messaged you. And if anybody thinks I'm lying, we could screenshot this whole conversation.
Yeah. I'd still put an asterisk because he's like, it has to be in Hawaii. Anything that's Hawaiian pineapple, you're not going to go to your local Texas Pizza Hut and put that dole pineapple in a can on a pie, and you're going to be like, that's good. So.
Let's be honest with all this. If you really just shouldn't get pizza unless you're outside of a couple couple areas in the whole country. I mean, so.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I guess that would be what weird, flying into Texas and be like, all right, pizza time.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm thinking barbecue. I'm thinking steaks. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not thinking pineapple pizza in Texas. But you know what? Don is a dreamer. Don is a dreamer like me. Don has big aspirations. Don is on my side, Berlu. And for one, you know what? Like, I haven't had someone on my side for so long. We literally stopped asking.
Feels good. Yeah. I mean, you got married and somebody else likes pineapple pizza. I'm happy for you, Scott.
Thank you.
You know what? I'm glad.
Thank you. Thank you.
In
you
hindsight, know what? It's great for you.
Sometimes the sun shines on a dog's ass. You know, like sometimes every once in a while, a broken a broken clock is correct twice a day.
Exactly. And I'd like to announce the new Verbal Shenanigans American team. I got some weather balloons. I got an old lawn chair. We're going to tie it up. We're going around the world, and we're going to take this $1 million, Verbal Shenanigans style. All right. I'm going to have.
I'll be ground control.
Keep me safe, and I'm going to have the General Lee just in case when I call in for the podcast, I'll be ready for you.
All right, I'll be ground control. You do the race. No problem. We got this. But. Don was awesome, man. I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, go check it out. All right, Berlu. Berlu, if you were going to make a flying machine, just like you would make your Iron Man mask, where would you start?
That's an interesting question.
Let's go Soapbox Derby. You got to go in the garage and go to Home Depot and pick up things. Where would you actually try to start to get something off the ground?
I mean, I guess that I would definitely need something that burns pretty good, you know. Some kind of jet fuel or something to that effect. I mean,
jet fuel. So you're going to start with jet fuel.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure this ends well.
If I'm going to build my own machine, it's got to be a kick-ass machine, you know. If I'm going to go out this way, I'm going to go with style. So, and there's no way I could just do something like, oh, look, I'm 5 feet in the air. No, I got to be in like freaking Detroit in 5 minutes.
So let's say we have the Verbal Shenanigans air race, me versus you. Your first step would be to go buy jet fuel.
Well. Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, just the fact that I can get jet fuel, I know you'll be sitting back, oh, damn, this is going to be tough.
Wow.
You can't sit back on your morals. You'll be have to really get some science stuff going on to figure out what to beat me with, you know?
Wow. Okay. I mean, good for you. Good for you. So then what would you do after the jet fuel?
I guess I'm going to get some good tires on it because when I come down, I want to be able to come down gently and smoothly, if you will. Right. You know, I need to know that I'll be able to brake when after I come screaming down with my jet fuel, whatever I have.
It's amazing that your flying machine has nothing but jet fuel and tires at this point.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I could just put the jet fuel on the tires and light a match. It'll do something.
Mike Berlu Science, everybody. If that's not a YouTube series, I don't know what is, where each week I just send you in a thing you have to make. I've been going in my garage. I found some gasoline in a trash bag.
The bag wouldn't float, man. Let's put it on fire and see what happens. Well, my garage moved a couple feet, and my wife's missing, so we'll see what happens afterwards.
So, I guess Don could be an early contender for science guest this year. We haven't had a ton of science guests, so it was pretty interesting.
If nature's considered science, then you have to factor in Kentucky Reptile Zoo.
Ah, yes, that's definitely science.
Yeah.
We got a ton of likes and shares with, which is kind of crazy. But and if you like dinosaurs, Thumpasaurus has to be considered science too. So
I guess so. Those beats are scientific from them.
Brother, what do you got?
I was running at work yesterday. I was they have like a outside trail, if you will, walking trail, and I was doing some walking there, and I had this. I don't know if it was a fly or a gnat or something like that, but like there was a good 500 feet section where the fly was continuously like circling around, and then I had to swap my hair because it was getting my hair and everything. And it reminded me of the time that I actually got lost in the woods because of a bug. Did I ever tell you that story?
No, but let me try to think about what happened.
I feel
like maybe you were trying to either collect the bug or knowing you maybe pet the bug because you thought it was cute. I'm like, come here, bug. Kind of like you were.
Come here, buggy. Oh, Mikey loves you.
Yeah, boy. And then
don't
like
be scared off by the Dukes of Hazzard horn. Come back.
And then the montage is you like tripping over rocks and getting deeper into the forest. And then the daylight starts getting into night. And then before you know, you're like, I can't find the bug. And I don't know where I am.
Well, that was a good story, but sadly, that's not my story. Scott.
Okay. okay.
Yeah, this was probably, I'd say, about a good 2.5-3 years ago. I was still in New Jersey at the time, and I remember I took a day off from work just because it was one of those, I can't take the stress anymore. I need to just clear my mind kind of things. So I Googled some kind of walking trail somewhere in the vicinity, and I forget where exactly I went, but I do recall there was something historical about it. There was like a mansion or something to the effect of that, but the big thing was I was concentrating on the hiking trails, and I decided to go for the big one. I think it was about 4 miles long or something to that effect. I've done the couple of the other trails there before, and it was just like, you know, a random circle, probably about a mile or something like that, nothing crazy to see or anything like that. So I figured make a day of it and go for the long one. So I'm going through the woods, and they have a couple trails, and I'm trying to keep up. I know it was the blue trail that I was trying to stay with the markers. They were marking it on the tree. They weren't the greatest markers in the sense that they almost like blended in with the colors of the tree, but
right.
I was going along fine, and I want to say it was probably like September or something like that. So we're kind of like fall weather, but it was a little bit warmer where the bugs were still out. And as I'm going through the trail, I constantly get like a gnat sound in my ear.
right.
And anybody who gets that little buzzing in the ear or something, that is one of the most annoying things on the planet. And it's kind of like the situation I talked about at work. Like, I kept going and going, and I don't know if it's from sweat or the shampoo I use or something. In fact, this bug absolutely loved me and would not leave me alone for any reason.
I picture you at like the dollar store picking up some shampoo that's like, you know, real cheap and whatever. It just, and on the bottom it says like, bugs love it.
Well, if bugs love it, it's good enough for birds. So I'm going through this trail and I'm the only one on it, and this bug would not stop. I mean, it was the king of annoying, and it would go in my ear. It would be in my hair. It would be landing on my face or whatever. So it got to the point where I just said, this thing is not going to leave me alone. So I just started sprinting in the woods to try to get away from this thing.
Right. Naturally.
And, you know, I would sprint a couple hundred feet. I would stop, and then all of a sudden, get the buzzing in your ear. I'm like, damn it. Start sprinting again.
Now, are you convinced it was the same bug or like a swarm or a group of bugs that were
I was convinced it was the same bug. I mean, I didn't. It's nothing like I saw a ton of like any kind of insects in the area. It was literally just the concept. I could tell it was the same sound, same everything, and it just could not leave me alone for any reason.
The same sound. You sound exactly alike. I know.
I know who you are. Don't you try to fool me. Don't try to put on an accent.
Okay.
Seeing your buggy my ass, I know it's you. So it got to the point where I just took off, and I literally probably went like a good quarter of a mile just to get away from this thing. And I got to like an open field and where I could get some speed. There was, power lines around. So I knew it was in some kind of vicinity of, some kind of neighborhood or whatever.
Right.
But when I found myself, I'm like, oh, thank God, I got away from it. I started looking at the open passages, and I noticed no matter where I go, I don't see any blue markers anywhere. So I had to get to the point where I had to.
This sounds like the worst movie plot ever.
I was part of it. I wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah.
But I was forced to basically. I said, okay. So
I camped out for 11 days straight.
I started a fire, and that damn bug got it. I'm like, damn you! Of course you would like light.
I survived on grass and water for 7 days. Work didn't know where I was.
I cut myself and I put my handprint on a rock. He became my best friend. So I had no idea where to go. So, and my phone wasn't at, had no reception or whatsoever. So I had to basically follow the power lines until I got to a road.
Jesus.
So I walked for about a good 15 minutes, and I finally made it to a road where I had some reception where I could get back to my car. So I put in the directions, and I had to walk another 4.5 miles on the road to get back to my car.
Wow. 4.5 more miles. That's significant.
I probably did a good 7-8 miles that day.
So you had no, your phone didn't work at all? You couldn't call like a cab or?
Well, number one, am I going to tell the cabbie? I don't know where I'm at to begin with.
True.
And two, it just got to the point, I'm like, you know what? I can live doing this. So I just walked it, I at least knew if I got tired, then I would have options. I'm on a road. I would eventually come to a street sign. That's my adventure where I did a quarter of a marathon thanks to a gnat.
Good job, Mike. I mean, I could completely see this. I just wish there was footage of you fighting the gnat off, like just slapping your face and talking to it. And I know at some point you definitely yelled at it.
Oh, yeah. I was grumbling. I'm like, and I would just keep running. I'm like, leave me alone. And Needless to say, none of my pep talk helped.
That's up there with very dumb things. I remember one time, I don't know why this is coming to my head as far as dumb things I've done. This is a quick story. I remember I was cooking one time in my old house, and I went for the top shelf and knocked an entire bag of flour over, like a big bag, like one of those big freaking sacks of flour. So
a joke you would see in a TGIF.
Right. Well, the ending is definitely like a TGIF, like, oh, Steve, like, and flour is everywhere. Now, flour is not an easy thing to clean up with just like a paper towel or something, because it just kind of goes everywhere. So I went and got the shop vac out. Now, I go to take the shop vac out, and I'm sucking it all up. And whatnot, but I guess I had the no filter in there. Like there's a wet vac filter, and it wasn't in it. So as I was sucking it all up, little did I know, all the flour was shooting out the back of the shop vac. I turn around, and the entire, I guess you could call it my dining room, was just covered. It looked like it snowed in there. It was just like an explosion of flour. but yeah.
Like, how far were you in before you noticed? Were you completely done?
I swear to God. I swear to God, it was just, I was basically done. Like, just like in my head, like cleaning up.
I'm so smart. I am so smart.
Just cleaning my house and my flower. And that. I remember, like, even like putting the shop back down, like sitting and like going to have to turn the TV on because I'm like, I can't do this right now. I can't. I'm so mad. Like, I gotta like let the flower sit there for a minute.
But, you're watching It's Always Sunny reruns.
Yeah.
Wife comes in. No, guys, it's fine. I'm making cocaine in here.
But, yeah.
Definitely didn't do anything stupid.
Yeah. So, Berlo, I was thinking, before we get any, our highest rated episode ever was an episode where we played a game of Battleship. Called Humiliation Battleship, basically. And
SS Humiliation.
I'm thinking it might be time to bring that back. I think it's been about 3 years at least. Right. I think it's time to play round two of that game.
All right. Have you tested out your board before you start crying to me on what occurred?
I have not tested it out. I've not even begun to set up my stories, but I'm sure deep in my mind there are five terrible stories that, you know, maybe it'll jostle some things that have never been on the podcast before, between either of us. You know, we could adjust the rules a little bit too. We could maybe make each ship a theme. I was thinking like a story from a theme, but I think in the next week or two, we should unveil Humiliation Battleship Part 2. What do you think?
Oh, I'm totally down with it. Yeah, I can. I'm sure if I have a bug that makes me lost in the woods, I'm sure I can come up with five other scenarios.
to
make me prepared for this episode.
That would be funny if one of them was like the like something embarrassing that the wives can tell about us, and we didn't know about it, and they had to send an audio clip to the other one. so like if you sunk the three or whatever, that was the wife ship, and she could tell something embarrassing about you that you don't even know, and we could play the audio clip on the.
I'd be down. Okay. I'd be down.
All right. Well, let's develop this over the next week or two. We also have a bit that we're trying to get going, but has been cut a whole bunch of times, left on the editing room floor because we've had too much content, people.
Too much magic going and too much Microsoft to teach all of you.
Correct. So I guess with that, I guess it's time to get out of here. Another good episode in the books. Climbing our way to 250, and by next year this time we'll be at 300. So unless I quit, which might happen. So
yeah, no, I'm gonna keep going. I'm gonna talk in this microphone regardless who's on the other side or if anything's recording.
I feel like
that's just how I flow.
Guys, welcome to episode 600 of the Dukes of Hazzard podcast. What are your feelings on the Dukes? Do you like them or do you not? I don't know. I'm taking callers. Caller number one.
Hey, Mike, this is your old friend Mikey Cooter here.
Woohoo!
First time, all the time, you know.
Oh, crap. Gee, Mike, I got cut off during that radio magic that was happening. I don't know if it could be recreated.
Well, I'm going to just tell people you're going to have to wait 300 some episodes on 83 and talk about a show that's about 80 years old. You're just going to have to wait. I'm going to build the suspense. You know, it's like Endgame. I'm going to make you wait a year or two.
Now, do you feel if you had a Dukes of Hazzard show or whatever, you would probably be the young up and coming like guy. Like your audience would probably be any older, like people who know as much as you.
I mean, Dukes of Hazzard, I think, came out in 79, I want to say. So I was 3 at the time.
Right, so
I guess I would be the most youthful Dukes of Hazzard,
you know,
podcast host ever.
That inspired me to definitely bring on someone who knows a lot about Dukes of Hazzard and have a freaking game show on this show. That is definitely happening. yes. Maybe I could get John Schneider to do like voice questions, like hello.
I'll just spend the entire game. Can you repeat the question?
Yeehaw!
Say it again, Johnny.
So, Berlo, I guess it's that time. I guess it's that time of the night to get the hell out of here, because we'll be back next week. You can't get rid of us.
Cannot. You can try. You'll probably be successful, but we'll keep coming.
Yeah, I mean, you could turn on like other podcasts, but why would you want to do that?
No, no. There's no other podcast out there in the world. I just checked.
People are
like, all of them disappeared.
Good.
Every single one.
We need a Thanos snap for like good podcasts. We have a second chance.
You got the 6 Infinity Stones and that's all you did? Yeah. Wanted to build the podcast numbers. That's all. I mean, we had to throw Dom Bagnato off a cliff in front of Red Skull to get one of them, but, you know, it was worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I would throw them off without any reward. So,
no.
What do you got to promote?
Well, even though I said there's no other podcast in the world, I'll talk about another podcast.
Yeah.
The podcast is called Dear Pod. That's Dear, P-O-D with a comma. It's a comedy podcast that looks back at the bygone era of writing advice columns like Dear Abby and Landers, etc., to see if their wisdom still holds up in modern culture. It's hosted by, I believe she was been a part of the Verbal Shenanigans comedy shows, Aaron McGuire.
Yep.
And Patrick O'Brien. It's a really fun podcast. They're on episode 3 right now, so check them out. It's Dear Pod with a comma at the end.
Absolutely. Aaron McGuire, a very funny comedian. She's been on a bunch of shows. A very awesome awesome gal, too. So go check out her comedy. She's hilarious.
She's the bee's knees.
She's the bee's knees, exactly. And I'm going to promote another. I don't know what to call it, a podcast, video cast, vlog. I don't know what it is, but
it's entertainment.
I might have promoted before, but I'll promote it again because yours truly and my dog and Obi, who's always on the podcast somehow, he's not interrupting tonight though. So we appeared on the second episode there, or third, or I don't know what it was, but it was comedian Fernandez with an S, not with a Z. Very funny comedian, has a little podcast called N Shit, N and then Shit. Go check it out. It's on YouTube. And it's just fun. Like, you can catch the last thing is we were just walking the dogs, and there's some footage. And every week or so, he's trying to put up new, you know, different things. And it's fun and entertaining, so go check that out. So I guess with that, guys, we are in a couple other locations. We are on the Coming Right Up Network every Wednesday at 12 o'clock. So if you're at your cubicle and you're allowed to listen to internet radio, go check them out. There's a lot of good programming on that. We are on the Discovery County Network out on the West Coast there. What time are we on that?
We're on there sporadic times. We're on channel 3. That's the talk channel on there. So we're on there. I don't think there's a set schedule, but watch us at various times.
Yeah, or go check them out and see when we're on. Go check the schedule. And then, Berlo, we are in Pittsburgh at
WHBJ-DB. Who has blue jeans? Dom Bagnato. That's how you remember it.
Who has? Well, wow. You've thought about this.
Yeah, and he's the only person with blue jeans, so it's easy to remember.
Who has blue jeans? Dom Bagnano. But anyway,
he got two shout-outs from me.
I know.
And I tell him he wears blue jeans.
A double dose.
And he has a baby, so good for him.
Yeah, well, so go check us out. That is a Pittsburgh internet radio station, and we're happy to be part of all three of those guys. And I guess that's it. I want to thank our guest, Berlu. I guess I don't really need to thank you, but life is funny.
I appreciate it.
I'm not doing it. Life is funny.
Save it for 250.
Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back. Go fly plane.
Bye bye.
Baby, kiss me. Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words.